Hello, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and this is Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Miles and as many hopes removed. Air-conditioned America sleeps its beauty sleep. We live here in the street of lost petals. We live in a house of bones, here in this land of fractured statues. We chat of summer and swimming and the latest tenor, while tears fall unnoticed in our breakfast food. Here we are again, here in Nevada City. I'm Utah Phillips. I'm here with Steve Baker, the engineer. That was Jimmy and Nancy again, as usual, playing that marvelous theme music, Loafer's Glory. The poem I did from a poem called The Indestructible by George Hitchcock. And that will lead us into something here in just a couple of minutes that I find important. We are at the studios of radio station KVMR, Community Radio Nevada City here, badgering, bullying the people's airways. We will make them conform or we shall harry them from the earth. It's a beautiful, bright, frozen winter day here in Nevada City up in the foothills of the Sierra. It was so cold out there you could freeze an egg on the sidewalk. You know, I've been promising now for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, that I was going to do a program with the music of Paul Robeson. And you know, I've wrestled with this now all of that time, and I have the material, and I have all the songs, and I have the stories, but every time I go over it, you know, I say, well, okay, we'll talk about Paul Robeson and the Peace Arch Concert and the Mine Mill and Smelter Workers Union. Well, who is that? What is that? Where's the context to put that music in? It's very, very frustrating. Look, that Cold War, that McCarthy era, the years and years, that blew some holes in our history that are big enough to float the Queen Mary through. And it's like having blinders on a whole culture. So I've decided that I'm going to try to create some sort of context, and I can only do it in a small way. You know, I'm not an educator, I'm not a school teacher, but in a small way to create some kind of context. And then next week, I will place Paul Robeson in that context so that it'd be a little easier to understand. Now, almost all of us know about the civil rights movement. We know about women's rights movement. We know about the labor movement. We know about the peace movement. We know about them as separate movements, to a large extent. How many people know, except those that were in it, that there was a radical cultural movement, the progressive movement, from 1935 to 1955, and that it combined these? It combined civil rights, women's rights, workers' rights, and peace. Combined them into one enormous movement through hundreds of theater groups, dance groups, concert productions, painters, singers, songmakers. It was a movement that involved rank-and-file labor, civil rights workers, feminists, socialists, communists, God knows, Democrats, trade unions, virtually every segment of our cultural life, with one goal: to eliminate poverty by eliminating wealth, and to promote the ideal of our collective responsibility to care for each other in matters such as health care, housing, pensions, education, civil rights, total artistic freedom. Yeah. That movement, that cultural movement, found a part of its voice in the bedrock, genuine, grinding poverty of the Great Depression, both in the city and in the country. Some of the first voices came from the country, from Appalachia. Aunt Molly Jackson, Harlan County, Kentucky. While her mother died of starvation when she was six, her father was blinded by a mining accident. Rock falls killed her husband, her son, her brother. She organized for the Mayan Union. She organized for miners' rights, for which she was exiled, expelled from Harlan County, Kentucky. She went to New York City, the heart of the progressive movement, and became part of it. At the same time, her half-sister, Sarah Ogan, whose story was pretty much the same as Aunt Molly's, Sarah Ogan and her children went to New York. That was an invitation of a New York University professor, Mary Elizabeth Barnacle. Sarah Ogan said, "I guess you could say she kept us from starving to death." Well, let's listen to Sarah Ogan Gunning singing Aunt Molly Jackson's song, Dreadful Memories.
Dreadful memories, how they linger, how they ever flood my soul, how the workers and their children die from hunger and from cold. Hungry fathers, worried mothers, living in those dreadful shacks. Little children, cold and hungry, with no clothing on their back. Dreadful gun thugs and stool pigeons always flock around our door. What's the crime that we've committed? Nothing, only that we're poor. When I think of all the heartaches and all the things that we've been through, then I wonder how much longer and what a working man can do. Really, friends, it doesn't matter whether you are black or white. The only way you'll ever change things is to fight and fight and fight. We will have to join the union. They will help you find a way how to get a better living. And for your work, get better pay.
Well, Sarah Ogan Gunning, isn't that a well-meant song? Meanwhile, up in the north, in the industrial centers, the same kind of thing was the same kind of growing resentment against the power of the rich, against the power of the corporations, and their stooges and the government was going on. It was in Detroit, well, all over Michigan, the building of the United Auto Workers as an industrial union rather than a bunch of craft unions. They needed wages, hours, and conditions, yeah. So, but at that time, the tactic wasn't to go out on strike because they just bring in scabs and keep the plants running. So the tactics were developed among the United Auto Workers to sit down in the workplace, just to stay there, to occupy the workplace until they came in and drove you out, and they occupied some of those places for some weeks. In the North, the impact of this simple, traditionally based music changed the progressive movement's approach to making songs from what had been a sort of ponderous and complex European model to simpler tunes and to lyrics that were easier to learn, to sing, and to adapt to your own needs. Like I say, it was all over Michigan the sit-down strikes happened. Maurice Sugar wrote a song called Sit Down, that was sung all the time that was happening. It's still sung. I still sing it. Maurice Sugar, he commented on that song. He said, "I wrote the song Sit Down during the avalanche of all the sit-down strikes which occurred during the early months of 1937. Sit Down was sung by the strikers in their meeting halls and in the plant while the strike was in progress, and the plant singing was part of the recreation of the workers, and they frequently improvised musical bands featuring guitars, accordions, mandolins, mouth organs, and now and then a saxophone. These bands went sled length for folk song, lots of hillbilly stuff, and lots of parodies, and they went for Sit Down in a big way. Well, here's the Manhattan Chorus. The left fostered many labor choruses during those days. Here's the Manhattan Chorus in their 1937 recording, Maurice Sugar's Sit Down. Sit down, and you know it worked. My God, it worked. We ought to start thinking about that again today. Hey, you fast food workers out there in your McDonald's, out there in your Burger King, you think about that. You think about that. Well, it was during that time, it was the Late Depression, there, because of this movement that cabaret and theater venues flourished in cities, especially New York City, but a lot of different places. And those theater and cabaret, they featured folk-based songs, singers who adapted, built on folk music that had been collected and imported into the progressive movement in the city from rural areas by song collectors like Alan Lomax. Well, now, let's take a minute to clear something up right now. But, say, folk-based, based on folk songs. Well, now, what is a folk song? You know, I have the axe. I am a folk singer. So I'm a carpenter, going to tell you about carpenter tools. Mechanic, going to tell you about mechanic tools. I'm a folk singer. I'm going to tell you what a folk song is. And you better just sit still and take it. First of all, a folk song is not owned. Got it? Not owned by anybody. It's like the National Forest. It's like the Postal Service. It's owned by all of us. It's got nobody's name on it, nobody's copyright on it. You understand that? Anybody says they own a song and it's a folk song, they're telling a lie. Folk song also shows evidence of change. It exists in different versions, but shows that the people have embraced it and adapted and moved it through their lives and passed it on. Also, there is no Republican folk music. You want to define folk music negatively, you could say it is that of which there is no Republican of it. Well now, some of this new cabaret music, however, was still grounded in musical ideas from Broadway and from Tin Pan Alley, and just as good. Let's listen to Saul Aaron's 1941 recording. We're going to listen to both sides of this, Capitalistic Bosses.
I'm the much maligned capitalistic boss. Every night upon my bed I toss, cause with all the money I've got, if you think I'm happy, I'm not. All I love, my work is a lot, yet I treat them so. Oh, I don't know, I'm really good at punk, but something is tearing me wide apart. I am only human, even as you and you. Daddy, and I cannot help it, no more than you or you. The things I do, I can't explain. Something is wrong with my brain.
Money fills my helpless head with fierce intoxication, feeble in its fiendish grip, oh fatal fascination. I can't resist the awful urge I feel within me rising, and when transformed I do emerge, I'm past all recognizing. My stomach is a bloated sight, I wear a silk hat day and night. I ride around in Cadillacs, I trample on the workers' backs, I chisel on my income tax, my God!
The things I do, I can't explain. Something is wrong with my brain. Take my wife, for instance. Really, she's not so bad. She was but a dairymaid and I a lad, and so we went. I can't explain. Something is wrong with my brain.
Our father was the president of Milk Incorporated. He taught his own contented cows to give evaporated. Though captain of his industry, he doted on his daughter and made her heir to gravy milk dissolved in Grade A water. I was a poor but honest lad. Her bovine beauty drove me mad. Her tender lips, her sable coat, that gem she wore around her throat, that gem she wore around her throat. My God!
And so we went. I can't explain. Something is wrong with my brain.
When it comes to labor, that's where I'm really fair.
After all, 'twas labor made me a millionaire, and yet we fight. I can't explain. Something is wrong with my brain.
I cut their wages every day, it gives me such a pleasure. I disregard the men that say they haven't any leisure. I always work them overtime without an extra penny. And if they ask for 2 weeks off, I just don't give them any. And when they strike, I clam down hard, protected by the National Guard. I raise a patriotic stink, I call on every first-class fink descended from the missing link. My God!
And yet we fight. I can't explain. Something is wrong with my brain. Take my son, for instance. He is my pride and joy. Daddy, quite a likely youngster. Really a clever boy. The things he does, I can't explain. Something is wrong with his brain.
I give him his allowance, but it's not enough for buttons. He has to have a yacht or two to keep up with the Huttons. You don't know what a lot it costs to keep a polo pony. And though he has no income tax, there's always alimony. His social life's a giddy whirl from debutante to chorus girl. He never sleeps, he never sits by Wendy, he's so shut to bits. He has to go to Biarritz, my God!
The things he does, I can't explain. Something is wrong with his brain. I'm the much maligned capitalistic boss. Every night upon my bed I toss, cause with all the money I've got, if you think I'm happy, I'm not. Oh, I love my workers a lot, yet I treat them so. Oh, I don't know, I'm really good at heart, but something is tearing me wide apart.
Oh, capitalistic boss, Saul Ahrens. Isn't that a piece of work? Well, now, it was in 1940. Pete Seeger returned to New York from a hitchhiking trip all over the country. When he got back, he hooked up with a singing organizer by the name of Lee Hayes, and later on with Millard Lampel, Mill Lampel, who was Hayes' roommate. Altogether, they formed a group that became central to the progressive movement's use of songs to organize, arouse, and entertain, the Almanac Singers. Pete Seeger describes Lee Hayes' response to the word almanac. Lee Hayes said, "Well, if you want to know what the weather is going to be, you have to look in your almanac. And if you want to know when to plant your spuds or what side of the moon to dig them in or when to go on strike, and if you want to know what's good for the itch or unemployment or fascism, you have to look in your almanac. That's what almanac stands for." The Almanac Singers. Well, now, I'll give you an example of them. Harry Bridges was the leader of the International Longshoremen's and Warehousemen's Union. They were based in San Francisco. Now, for nearly 20 years, Harry Bridges was red-baited. For nearly 20 years, he had fought the government's attempt to deport him back to Australia, where he was born. As always, and the progressives rallied around their own and protected their own. Here's a hastily recorded record, not a great record, what great recording, by the Almanac Singers. It was now joined by Woody Guthrie, 1942 recording of Song for Bridges.
Let me tell you of a sailor, Harry Bridges is his name. An honest union leader who the bosses tried to brain. He left home in Australia to sail the seas around. He sailed across the ocean to land in Frisco town. There was only a company union, the bosses had their way. A worker had to stand in line for a lousy dollar a day. When up spoke Harry Bridges, "Us workers got to get wise. Our wives and kids will starve to death if we don't get organized."
Oh, the FBI is worried, the bosses, they are scared. They can't deport 6 million men, they know. And we're not gonna let them send Harry over the sea. We'll fight for Harry Bridges and build the CIO.
They built a big bonfire by the Matson lines that night. They threw their pink books in it and they said, "We're gonna fight. You've got to pay a living wage or we're gonna take a walk." They told it to the bosses, but the bosses wouldn't talk. They said there's only one way left to get that contract signed. And all around the waterfront they threw their picket line. They called it Bloody Thursday, the fifth day of July. 400 men were wounded and 2 were left to die.
Oh, the FBI is worried, the boss says they are scared. They can't deport 6 million men they know. And we're not gonna let them send Harry over the sea. We'll fight for Harry Bridges and build the CIO.
Now that was 7 years ago, and in the time since then, Harry's organized thousands more and made them union men. We must try to bribe him, the shipping bosses said. And if he won't accept the bribe, we'll say that he's a red. The bosses brought a trial to deport him over the sea, but the judge said, he's an honest man, I got to set him free. Then they brought another trial to frame him if they can, but right by Harry Bridges stands every working man.
Oh, the FBI is worried, the bosses, they are scared. They can't deport 6 million men they know. And we're not gonna let them send Harry over the sea. We'll fight for Harry Bridges and build the CIO.
The Almanac Singers and Harry Bridges. Song for Harry Bridges. That Build the CIO, that's a good example of what progressive politics were about at that time, progressive economics. That, sure, we have a labor movement today, but it's largely organized according to craft, like it was in the last century, you see, which meant that you could have maybe 20 different unions on the same job, like on the airlines. But what would it be like if, say, all airline workers, from the pilots down to the baggage handlers, belong to one union, one airline workers' industrial union? Why, you might damn well wind up owning an airline. That's why the idea of industrial unionism was so frightening to the boss, so frightening to corporate capitalism. So Harry Bridges was a West Coast secretary of the Department of the West of the Congress of Industrial Organizations, which was trying to organize by industry and not by trade. And that's why they were so so viciously attacked. I mentioned Woody Guthrie. Well, now the West had its own Woody Guthrie by the name of Vern Partlow. He was a roving journalist and organizer, labor singer. I tell you, he was a stinging satirist. In 1931, he helped to recruit members for the American Newspaper Guild, for which he organized in Chicago and Los Angeles in 1942 while working for the Los Angeles Daily News. Vern Partlow said, as a newspaper reporter traveling around, I thought there was a great affinity between, in my life anyway, between the folk songs I had known, although I didn't call them folk songs in those days, and the newspaper business, that is, reporting the news. Because actually the troubadour or the folk singers of yesteryear were the newspaper men of their day. And in some ways they file a much more accurate way of reporting. They didn't have to worry about policy or anything else. They just sang whatever they thought was so. Well, now World War II was on. We're going to listen to the job Vern Partlow did on William Randolph Hearst, the publisher, Herbert Hoover, former president, and Congressman Martin Dies, who chaired a special committee on un-American activities from 1938 to 1944. His committee became HUAC, the House Un-American Activities Committee, which, after the war, along with Big Mrs. and the FBI, undertook the destruction of the progressive movement. Let's listen to Vern Partlow's 1942 recording, Native American Nazi.
I'm a Native American Nazi, and my name is Willie Hearst. Of all the things I suffer from, democracy's the worst. I've done good work for Hitler. I love to spread his lies. I'm bound to be a Führer. Oh, lay me down and die. So remember me to Adolf and Heil to Goebbels, too. I'll help to fight the unions, the Negro and the Jew. I'll help to split democracy by splitting you and you. For I'm a Native American Nazi, and don't you dare to boo. I'm a Native American Nazi, and my name is Martin Dyes, and things are hotsy-totsy, for I'm having luck with lies. I'm probably the only guy who gets an appropriation for doing the enemy's job at home and trying to wreck the nation. So remember me to Adolf, and tell him Martin said, when any guy supports the war, I simply call him red. I take my tips from Adolf, as all good Nazis do, for I'm a Native American Nazi, and don't you dare to boo. I'm a Native American Nazi, or maybe I'm just a phony. My name is Herbert Hoover, now please don't say baloney. I hate democracy so much, I hate the Russians too. I backed away so far, I landed in the Nazi stew. So remember me to Adolf, I'm helping to win his war by fighting hard against the things the folks are fighting for. I'm fighting hard for profits and for reaction too, for I'm a Native American phony, and don't you dare to boo. Well, I'm not exactly a Nazi. I guess I'm a sort of a riddle. I happen to be the Attorney General. My name is Francis Biddle. I've been mighty careless with Nazis. There's mighty few doing hitches. You see, what I'm really trying to do is deport a fellow named Bridges. So I don't really like Mr. Hitler, and I don't really care for his foes. Just what in the hell that makes out of me, well, damn me, heaven knows. It's not that I like Mr. Hitler more, but I like Mr. Bridges less. But I'm not exactly a Nazi, so don't you dare to hiss. I'm a Native American Nazi, the guy that you voted for. You sent me up to Congress to help you win your war. I voted to boost all prices up. I voted to stock the poor. I hope to have inflation here by 1944. So remember me to Adolf. I'm really having fun. I hope to strangle FDR and stop the Second Front. I hope you voters stay asleep. I really hope you do, for I'm a Native American Nazi, and don't you dare to boo. Boo.
Well, here we are. We're carrying on with our odyssey through the progressive movement. Now, Pete Seeger returned from military service. He was in Saipan, the war in the Pacific. He came back with a dream. The dream was to expand the Almanac Singer's ideas and the concepts into people songs. People songs, a national movement that would unify songwriters, performers, choral groups, and labor unions into a force for political and social change. Within a year, there were branches in Los Angeles, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, Texas, New York, Toronto, New Mexico, Minneapolis. In 1948, People's Songs threw itself into the presidential campaign of Henry Wallace, that had been Roosevelt's vice president, running on the Progressive Party ticket, third-party candidate. Well, that campaign so seriously depleted the funds and volunteers of People's Songs that the organization was dissolved in 1949, but it was dissolved into and was revived as Sing Out, a national folk song magazine which is still being published out of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Issue 1, February 1946 of the People's Song Bulletin, described the organization's purpose this way. The people are on the march and must have songs to sing. Now, in 1946, the truth must reassert itself in many singing voices. There are thousands of unions, people's organizations, singers, and choruses who could gladly use more songs. There are many songwriters, amateur and professional, who are writing these songs. It is clear that there must be an organization to make and send songs of labor and the American people through the land. To do this job, we have formed People Songs Incorporated. We invite you to join us. Well, GI soldiers returning from World War II found it impossible to find affordable housing. Now, the People's Songs of California, which was one of the main branches of People's Songs Incorporated, People's Songs of California was active in support of progressive causes up and down the state. In 1947, they joined the American Veterans Committee in a massive rally and then a long caravan to Sacramento on the issue of housing. Now, Mario Cassetta was a co-founder of the National People's Songs with Pete Seeger. He said, on that caravan, Earl Robinson and I sang together a lot during that trek, and we would try to get people to join in, and we had some success. So when we rolled into Sacramento, we had many, many cars. Here's People's Songs of California, Mario Cassetta singing On to Sacramento.
Oh, we'll get our friends together, as many as we can. Pile into jalopies and make a caravan. We'll call upon the governor and legislature too. And we won't come back until we put our housing program through.
On Sacramento, on Sacramento. And we won't come back until we put our housing program through.
We will stop off in the valley at cities on the way. Join with other people who want to have their say. Then on to Sacramento, the crowd will pass the word. And we'll camp right at the Capitol to make our voices heard.
On Sacramento, and we'll camp right at the Capitol to make our voices heard.
Now we mailed a lot of letters and sent out telegrams telling how the people were needing housing plans. We didn't get an answer when we wrote him before. So it's on to Sacramento to knock on Warren's door.
On Sacramento, so it's on to Sacramento to knock on Warren's door.
We're demanding rental housing, and we don't mean a tent. No restrictive covenants and ceilings on the rent. If they can put out millions for highways in the state, then they can put up housing, or we'll give them the gate.
On Sacramento, they can put up housing, or we'll give them the gate. On Sacramento, and we won't come back until we put our housing program through.
Well, that was On to Sacramento. Now, you understand that before, during the Second World War, there were ceilings on rents, there were ceilings on prices, you know, and they were administered by the OPA. There was enormous energy after the war that was used to hold on to elements of the progressive program that were realized before and during the war. Now, the government, a.k.a. big business, wanted to phase out the OPA, the Office of Price Administration, which enforced price and rent controls. People's Songs organized with other organizations to save the OPA. Well, here's Bob Claiborne and Pete Seeger's 1946 recording. It's a real raucous bit called the OPA Shout.
Mama, they're killing the OPA. Mama, don't let them pass that bill. Prices are plenty high today, but if they kill the OPA, they're going to be higher still. Mama, they're killing the OPA. Mama, don't let that bill go through. Milk, rice, butter, will slow. We've already eaten no meat no more than what are we going to do? Mama, they're killing the OPA. Mama, do something right away. Get in there and shout, hey, let them know what you know what it's all about today, today, today. Hey, hey, don't let them kill the OPA. 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 Hey, Mama, don't let them kill the OPA.
If they take away the ceiling on rent, we may all be living in a tent.
My might have to save for half a year before you can buy a brassiere.
Cigarettes were $12 a carton in France. It can happen here if you take a chance.
Yes, if they take away the ceiling on clothes, we'll all be nudists. Mama, they're killing the OPA. Mama, don't let them pass that bill. Prices are plenty high today. But if they kill the OPA, they'll be higher still. Mama, they're killing the OPA. Mama, don't let that bill go through. Milk will rise and butter will thaw. We won't eat no meat no more. Then what are we gonna do? Mama, killing the OPA. Mama, do something right away. Get in there and shout, hey, let them know you know what it's all about. Today, 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 hey, don't let them kill the OPA. Send a letter right today. Don't let them kill the OPA.
Send a telegram today.
Don't let them kill the OPA.
Send your congressman today.
Don't let them kill the OPA. 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 Hey, mama, don't let them kill the OPA.
Don't let them kill the OPA. Well, now, closer to 1950, it's as the Cold War got deeper and deeper, the deep freeze, the House Un-American Activities Committee became much more aggressive, the McCarthy times, and that was an all-out campaign by the right to exterminate the progressive movement forever. It was subpoena, inquisition, accusation, threats of prison, fire the teachers, blacklist the writers, filmmakers, artists, anyone with a real or imagined connection with any part of the movement. Slowly, this vast, complex, beautiful movement was dismantled with McCarthyism, a political dark age. Maury Goodson, well, he was wounded in action at Guadalcanal in the Pacific and then again at Iwo Jima, shrapnel wounds. After the war, he became part of the People's Songs of California with his partner, Sonny Vale. Goodson was projected to have a brilliant career on Broadway in musicals. Well, Goodson and Vale toured for the Wallace campaign. After the demise of People's Songs, they rarely performed together. Now, Maury Goodson worked through the William Morris Booking Agency, one of the biggest, and they had promised and they had guaranteed him that he was going to get a part in the original production of Guys and Dolls, first on Broadway and then in the Roadshow. But he picked up Variety, a show business magazine, one morning and saw the parts had been given to somebody else. Well, every day, Maury called his agent and waited for him to call back. His wife remembers Vivian Goodson. They never did, and so he called again, and this time they acted as if they'd never heard of him. And the third time he called, he said he wanted to speak directly to his agent. And his agent got on and said, you know, I don't think it's for you. Maury said, you got anything else? And he said, listen, I'm busy. I really can't talk to you now. Maury got off the phone and said, my, I've been blacklisted. Let's listen to Goodson and Vale now, singing their 1947 recording of The Red Boogie.
Jimmy was a maritime worker. He worked night and day. Workers at his side were unhappy, needed higher pay. The bosses of the ship said, no,
no, sir,
you ain't a-gonna get more dough.
Uh-uh.
So Jimmy and Johnny and Maritime Mike very calmly went out on a maritime strike. That began it, then it began. Your red pride reporters and the filthy press. Your red pride the bosses who began the mess. And Jimmy unenlightened was so very, very frightened that he ran like a snail with a whale on his tail. He got the red boogie, the red, red boogie, the red boogie blues. When Jim pulled into Frisco Harbor,
He went ashore to see his barber. His hair was never cut.
No, no.
'Cause the guy went off his nut.
Yes, yes.
At the sight of the red on the barber pole, the red, red bogeyman had taken his toll. The ship dropped anchor at Havana. The night was hot and so was Anna. His passion knew no bound till her hat fell to the ground. And he fainted away 'cause her hair was red. The red, red boogeyman was under his bed. You're red, cried the radio to FDR. You're red if you love the Russian caviar. Though facts and figures show it, Jumpin' Jimmy didn't know it. You're a red in the eyes of the guys with a go. They sing the red boogie, the red, red boogie, the red boogie blues. Came the dawn and Jim was shaving, lather up and whiskers waving. The blood began to drip when Jimmy cut his lip. And he died when he spied that his blood was red. The red, red boogeyman was one jerk ahead. You're red if you want to kill the KKK. You're red if you want to see a better day. So don't start caring if they wave the red herring. 'Cause if you think Franco stinks, you're a red. And if you hate all the finks, you're a red. And if you criticize Truman when he acts inhuman, you're a red, 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 red. You're not alone in the fight, don't you see? You're in the right, in the best company. So don't start caring if they wave the red herring. It's the red boogie, the red boogie. We're gonna kill that boogeyman.
Goodson and Vale. You know, the Wallace campaign, that was the one great folk, one great rallying of the entire left, of all of the progressive movement. That party was the Progressive Party, really hoped to attract disfranchised liberal Democrats, particularly women and minorities fighting for equal rights. Wallace, Henry Wallace, unified liberal and leftist groups by appealing, well, for federal health insurance programs, higher minimum wage, expanded Social Security benefits, any of that sound familiar? And a liberal peace policy toward Russia. The early polls suggested the party could achieve many of its goals during the 1948 campaign, and it led to red baiting in the media and on occasion acts of violence against progressive candidates and their supporters. A tireless campaigner for Wallace was Malvina Reynolds, Berkeley, California, a prolific songmaker who wrote this song in 1948, Work with Wallace.
Paper lines give you spots in the eye, and Hollywood comedies drive you to tears. Are you jittery all through the day? Do you toss on your pillow at night? You can cure all your ills without powders or pills, and change your despair to delight. Work with Wallace and relax. Work with Wallace and relax. Life can be beautiful, the future can be fair. Peace and security are there for the taken sins. The People's Party got underway. Hope is the order of the day. You'll find yourself singing while the doorbells ring. Work with Wallace and beware. Are you worried and wistful and wan? Do you wish you could take to the hill? Do the diplomats cause you a deep-seated nausea? And spy horror tales keep you biting your nails? Are you running around in a rage? And all of your streets are dead ends, whilst scandal and rumor increase your ill the People's Party gun underway. Hope is the honor of the day. You'll find yourself singing while the doorbell rings.
Melvina Reynolds, boy, don't we miss her. She was a good friend and had a chance to travel around and share the same stage together many, many times. She kept at it all through the Cold War and all through the folk music revival. It was the Big Red Scare to the big folk music scare, folks. Yeah, the Cold War. Like I say, it blew a hole in our history. We're going to be lucky to recover from what the Cold War did to us as a people, culturally. It may take 100 years. It may never happen. We just got to keep at it. The Cold War, red baiting, blacklisting, the failure of the Wallace campaign, the artful revision of history lowered a curtain on an enormously important movement, a radical cultural movement, like I say, the progressive movement. It is seldom written about, spoken of, taught, studied, as though nothing important had ever happened. But it did happen. Restored to the light of day, to the classroom, the TV and movie screens, that lost history can begin to help us, all of us, especially our kids, to understand what went wrong and exactly what to do about it. Well, here's the Weavers, If I Had a Hammer.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out a warning, I'd hammer out love between all of my brothers. I'd ring it in the morning, I'd ring it in the evening, all over this land. I'd ring out danger, I'd ring out a warning, I'd ring out love between all of my brothers.
Thank you for sticking with me on this one. This has been Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. My name is Utah Phillips, and Tapper Light. From Langston Hughes. Oh, let America be America again. The land that never has been yet, and yet must be. The land where everyone is free. The land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand in the foundry, whose plow in the rain, must bring back our mighty dream again. Oh, yes, I say it plain, America never was America to me, and yet I swear this oath, America will be.